Another auteur director channels his love of Showa-era tokusatsu in a fun project that got little play outside of its native release in Japan. In a movie that answers the question, what do you get when you cross Gamera, Toy Story, J-Rock, and Japanese comedy? Well, you get a recipe for perhaps the most unique film of all time. This is Kaiju vs. History, Love and Peace.
Welcome back to Kaiju vs. History. This is your Japanese salaryman, Patrick, and joining me is a telepathic turtle that weighs a ton, Miles. Hey, Miles.
Ah!
Pika! What if it just said its own name? No, you can't say Pika. You can't say Pika.
He did at one point, though, I think. Yeah. Someone was yelling Pika, and I was like, oh, that's clever.
Yeah. You already thought you watched the Pokemon Kaiju movie, but no, it rears its head again with a cute Kaiju.
And we know how I felt about that Pokemon Kaiju movie, so.
Yeah, I had to pare down. There's so many, like, influences, pop culture influences, I feel like, in this movie that you could talk about, because there's a little bit of Ninja Turtles in this movie.
Oh, there's a little bit of everything. This movie is such, I would love to, like, chat with the director, because I feel like it's a kaleidoscopic, like, array of images and influences that come to this movie. There's so many things.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
There's so many American Christmas movies that I think influence this movie, which doesn't start off as a Christmas movie. Like,
no, and
it only becomes a Christmas movie in, like, the last third of the movie.
Well, and, like, how long, like, what period of time does this movie exist? Because, like,
it's supposed to be, like, a week.
Right. And it doesn't look super cold at any point in this movie, really, until the end and you start getting the fake snow. But it is, Miles, and we're recording this before the holiday season, before Xmas. But this is coming out.
We just finished stuffing our bellies full of turkey.
Oh, my gosh, so much. I brined a fresh organic turkey for the first time this year. And it was good.
We didn't cook ours this year. We got ours. I'm only telling you because you know exactly what I'm talking about. The Beacon actually did turkeys this year, and it was insanely delicious.
You can buy a pre-cooked kind of like rotisserie turkey from Popeye's Chicken as well.
Oh yeah, they had a Cajun one. I would try it. I don't know if I would trust it. The Beacon, for those who don't know, is a place in Spartanburg, South Carolina, where both Patrick and I went to college. Also, where I grew up. It's a famous drive-in. Formerly famous drive-in. It used to have billboards all over the country.
Maybe I ate there once, but I really only knew it because it had tooth-crackingly sweet tea.
Which at the time that we were in school was being bottled and distributed all across the state.
Yeah, it's something that, like, I can't think of sweet tea without thinking of it. And, like,
yeah, 100%.
Are you originally
from the North, Patrick?
Yeah. I was born in New York.
So sweet tea is not something that comes often to you then?
No. And even when I lived down there, I guess I didn't really make it very often. I didn't really have it. My grandparents also had, like, regular iced tea, no sweetener in there.
Yeah, so down in the Southeast United States, if tea is not giving you diabetes, it's not tea.
Yeah, like, it's gotta be grainy salt.
There are probably people who are not from this who think I'm just being, like, mean, and then everyone who else is from the South, I'm like, no, that's true, that's grandma's recipe.
No, you're better off sucking down a Coca-Cola for sugar content.
No kidding.
The healthy alternative.
It absolutely is. And I grew up loving it, but now I'm just like, I can't do it anymore.
If I had known this movie was going to be a holiday movie, though, I would have tried to make this our holiday special, because it is.
I mean, we still can. We can just move this around. Like, well, it's our show. We can do whatever we want.
That's a good point. But right now we have the Godzilla episode a couple weeks prior. And
so what?
Well, I will say I'm feeling the holiday spirit, and, you know, all the way back in, oh boy, the end of the first or middle of the first season our episode 16 in 2022, we had a holiday special where we talked about a hypothetical Christmas kaiju movie. This movie is it.
Like, I mean, it exists. It is and it's not. You know, let's this is certainly a more of a tokusatsu than a kaiju project. And when we were talking about a kaiju project, we meant a daikaiju versus type of movie where one of our favorite titular kaijus, I think we settled on Gamera at the time.
Hey, Gamera's great. Gamera already had a movie
had to fight
that time.
A Christmas-themed creature, which an abominable snowman would have been great.
To be honest, I thought that PC 3000, the robot, was going to grow huge as well and have a fight in this movie.
Any of those Island of Misfit Toys creatures, okay, I thought was going to get big. I thought we were going to have some nightmare fuel with the little baby doll getting big.
Can you imagine, yeah, Maria having a fight? No.
Looking for Yuki.
The movie doesn't present, like you said, super holiday. It's just more family and like comedy oriented for the first half. Doesn't turn into super Christmas movie until the third act,
it doesn't even feel like a family movie for half this film.
I wouldn't say it's like really raunchy too much.
No, it's not raunchy. I just mean like the characters and settings, it doesn't really.
Well, we get the scene where, you know, that the Island of Misfit Toys shows up and it's like, oh, okay, interesting. And that is very,
yeah, but it's Island of Misfit Toys, but like the Sid's house in Toy Story.
Like, no, the old drunk man fixes them up.
He does. But like when you first see them, you're like, what is going on? What is with this nightmare fuel? Like, you're my first gut reaction to all these puppets, like especially Sulky, I was like, oh, this is horrifying. It becomes cute. That first sequence is 100%. I'm like, oh, this is we're in Toy Story now.
It's a little Tim Burton-esque, I think. It's a little dark cutesy, which is kind of fun. And I think maybe the director
also, all the toys are depressed.
Oh yeah, all the toys are super sad that they're
didn't understand if
away
the dogs were like stuffed animals that had come to life or actual
stray
dogs who gets murdered.
No. It's a mix of pets that are abandoned. So I don't think they all go down the toilet. I think he also just picks them up.
Right, right. It's the Misfit Toys thing, but there's a sequence where he just like fucking gives everyone the death juice.
Well, first of all, we can't spoil that part because I want to talk about it later.
Okay.
It's not. But I thought it was when that came up. Like, holy.
Because I was like, did he give that to the dogs?
Every misfit gets
magical juice. Were they supposed to be actual stray or runaway pets?
Yes.
Or were they stuffed animals that come to life?
No, I mean, because there's also stuffed animals that are animals.
That's true.
But there's
so
also
he murdered
like
dogs.
Every pet. No, you just didn't understand the movie, Miles. Were you doing something else while you were watching this?
No,
I was watching. Were you two screening this film?
No.
All right, good, because if you miss parts, I'm going to make you rewatch it.
I could have sworn that he gave that little tray of juice to everybody.
He did. And we'll talk about it because we can't skip ahead, Miles. We got to talk about this movie in order. It's so good.
I just remember being like, this movie is not what I expected it to be.
Yeah, this movie, it goes off the rails at that part. And we haven't even gotten to the giant Gamera sized turtle.
Peek it on.
Peek it down. Yeah, can we talk about the title first?
Yeah.
Love and Peace. That is the name of the movie. It is, we get it in a title card at like the 13-minute mark. It's pretty late into the film.
Yeah, it's
pretty
late. It's not that it has like a long title sequence. The movie starts.
No, the movie just goes and we eventually get to Love and Peace. Yeah, like I said, I think it's at the 13-minute mark. I made a note because I was like, oh, wow, how much longer is in the movie?
Yeah, was this directed by J.J. Abrams? Because that's how every episode of Alias was like, you know, of a sudden the intro would come in like 25 minutes into the show. So this movie starts off interesting because like you can clearly see that he is kind of hallucinating what's on TV. Like it's supposed to be kind of like, at first I thought it was a dream. It's like, no, he's just like hearing things. And I was like, so the entire time I'm wondering, is this whole thing is in his head?
Yeah, well, that part is. And hilariously, this movie came out in 2015. And Tokyo was selected as the host city for the 2020 Olympics 2 years prior, year and a half prior, 2013. And that becomes kind of a focus for this film is, you know, talking about the 1964 Olympics, which was a previous, you know, the Showa era kind of peak for Japanese culture on display to the world.
Mm-hmm.
Really put it on the map because of their relatively quick turnaround from World War II into a global superpower on the rise and them hosting the Olympics. This time around, the hosts on this TV show are talking about how it could do the same thing, and they unfortunately didn't know about COVID, which would
this is a 2015 movie. I it was kind of interesting, like watching this, like knowing the 2020 Olympics had already kind of passed, and
it's like, oh, sorry, Japan. Maybe we'll get a shot another.
But it's 50, okay because like years. I kept like squinting my eyes. I'm like, wait a minute, I know this guy. I'm like, oh yeah, he's Rando in Shin Godzilla.
Yes.
He's the lead guy in Shin Godzilla.
Yeah, Hiroki Hasegawa is our main character, Ryu, or in this film, and he's been in, has he been in another kaiju project? Oh, he was.
He's going to be in Attack on Titan.
Attack on Titan. Yes, some of our next movies that we're going to be watching here. So he had a 3 year run or 2 year run for 2015, 2016 of like 3 to 4 different kaiju films, which is kind of funny.
Well, and he's done stuff with this director before,
right?
So like that's, you can always tell when a director likes using someone because they keep popping up in their work, and that certainly happens a lot with a lot of Japanese directors. But
yeah, he was in Why Don't You Play in Hell, which
the director's prior movie
looks like a wild Quentin Tarantino inspiration.
I think I've seen that movie. But I can't remember off the top of my head if I've seen it or not, because the poster and the coloration looks like 12 of the movies that I watched in 2013. So like, it's okay. But
this movie is directed by Sion Sono, who is a very critically acclaimed subversive director who has done a couple of pretty wild out there projects, which I feel like I've heard of tangentially. But I don't know if I've watched any of his movies. The big one that caught a lot of international kind of exposure for him was Love Exposure, a 2008 film that is nearly 4 hours long that he wrote and directed.
Yeah. He's not a writer director, but he wrote and directed a Cold Fish.
Correct. Yep. Shiki Takahashi.
Which is very, very good.
The year that this movie came out, Love and Peace, he directed 4 other movies in Japan.
Which is insane.
Real Tag, The Virgin Psychics, The Whispering Star, and Shinjuku Swan. And, you know, none of them are like super long. They're not 4 hour movies. But yeah, 4 feature films is pretty crazy. For a director. So this is him at his most prolific.
Also,
he's not done that again since.
I want you to tell everyone his English speaking movie.
Oh yeah, so it's one I still haven't gotten to, but I was very close.
Oh, it's a trip, bro.
2021's Prisoners of the Ghostland, which
starring
we were talking about it last week. Nicolas Cage as hero. But also Sofia Boutella is the other lead in Bernice.
Yes,
and it's like a post-apocalyptic movie, I think.
Yeah, it's a wild trip, dude. No, he's got a very, very cool filmography. Like, there are certain like filmmakers, and actually another one that the actor works with of this film has worked with Kiyoshi Kurosawa, who is another like really great Japanese actor who works a lot with genre, but also does things that where it's like. He works with genre, but it's not in the way you think. Like his film Cure, like everyone loved talking about Silence of the Lambs connection with Long Legs. No, Cure. Cure is the movie that has the direct connection to Long Legs, if you hadn't seen that film yet. But yeah, no, I love kind of going down these like 6 degrees of separation with Japanese actors and directors because, yeah, they tend to have a lot of connections. And I love seeing, like, you can always tell like when people click artistically because they get used again. And sometimes like it's like, oh, you know, they've been working for this director for like, you know, 15, 20 years, and then finally got their breakout role with them. So, like, it's always kind of cool to see that kind of stuff happen.
Hiroki Hasegawa is great in this movie.
Yes.
Just hands down great. He is chameleon in going from the most, you know, sad, pathetic office worker to like the coolest rock star, and then kind of back again over the course of this film, which is our B plot. It's about a office worker basically getting a turtle who has the ability, after he flushes it down the toilet, to grant his wish of becoming, you know, the next Lady Gaga, or I don't know what the good equivalent would be, next superstar rock star. And it happens in very short order. That's the A plot. The B plot is his pet turtle, Picadon, which is a reference to the white flash of the atomic bomb, which is pretty funny. Picadon gets accidentally.
That, honestly, that was the weirdest thing. I was like, this is pretty dark.
Yeah. Picadon gets flushed down the toilet and goes to the aisle of misfit toys and finds a magical drunken homeless man who like fixes the toys and gives them a place to live. But then like at one point mentions very offhandedly that like the toys only stay there for 1 year before they're given to another home. And like, then he issues in a new, you know, basically a school year of toys and discarded pets. Those scenes, it feels like a completely different movie. It's hilarious that they don't interact with the A plot at all. They're so right. Good. They're so weird. The puppetry feels amateurish, like on purpose, but there's also just like animals in every single shot. Bunnies, there's parrots, there's dogs, all kind of discarded pets down there, which I'm sure was like super difficult to work with, but it's very fun to just watch the background of those scenes and see all the animals futzing about. Yeah, lots of kaiju DNA in this film, but like you said, probably more so just tokusatsu love in this film. It does have the absurd quality of very recent films like Monster X Strikes Back or Death Kappa, but like way toned down compared to those. But yeah, Jellyfish Eyes was just the 2 years prior, Gamera the Brave a few years before that. I feel like this movie is kind of playing into similar fields. Like, I don't think it's a children's movie. I mean, I don't know. Japan is super weird with like what they consider children's appropriate content, but this definitely feels like a very lighthearted movie, especially when you get to that third. I enjoy this movie a great deal, Miles. I want to get to start spoiling it a little bit more because
okay, let's do it. No, this is certainly here's my okay, let's start off. So we have Ryoshi, who is a salaryman who dreams of being a rock singer. And in fact, was like a musician prior, but only three people came to his show. He is, I think, maybe too hyperbolically depicted as kind of a nerd, like someone who's not really accomplished much and is super meek. And it's there's a style of comedy it's prevalent here too, but it's also very prevalent in Japan of kind of overdoing the impression, and it always gets on my nerve. It happens in anime. It happens when it happens in American comedy here. I kind of wish they had depicted him a little more grounded than just being like, I mean, it felt like he walked off Revenge of the Nerds, you know?
there's one, the first part of the movie that I like busted out laughing at was when he sees the guitarist like on the walkway.
With the turtle guitar.
Turtle guitar, and he like starts crying and then like crawling after him on his belly. It is the most over exaggerated, kind of like pathetic. Well,
not only that, but like then 15 minutes later we're like they see him on the road and then pull over their van, shove him in the van, chain him up.
Oh yeah, it's so ridiculous.
Like a dog not feel at their bad show. For
the band at all so afterwards, anyway, but
yeah, so he he kind of there's another kind of slightly nerdy person at the office, this girl who is kind to him, and he has feelings for her but doesn't, you know, can't articulate them and doesn't know how to talk to her. And then as he's sitting and eating lunch one day, he sees a guy across the guess the rooftop with that he's on.
Where we're supposed to believe that they are, yeah.
There's a guy just chilling there selling turtles.
He's got the goofiest smile. That's the other part I really laughed at, was when he goes back after he loses Pikadon and sees him. He's like, how's the turtle?
So he sells him this turtle who becomes like his best friend. And he talks to him constantly, tells him all of his hopes and dreams and sets him up and like puts him in these like fun little dream scenarios where it's like, oh, if you cross this line, I will reach my goal. And it kind of gives him a little bit of normality. Despite the fact that he's got a turtle as companionship, like he's starting to be a little bit more normal. And then until she sees the turtle and gasps at first because she wasn't expecting it, which draws attention, and everyone in the office is looking at this turtle, teasing him because of his turtle. And as a result, he, in a fit of like, I guess, manic panic, flushes the turtle down the toilet and immediately regrets it. And this actually is what kickstarts his rise to stardom.
Yeah. So Pikadon goes down to the Isle of Misfit Toys, which is very much feels like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle lair.
Right.
It's a subterranean sewer base where I'm
guessing Santa lives, because well, we're spoiling now, right? Because
it is just a drunk. It is a homeless drunk man who collects toys that are thrown out by kids who get sick of them, or pets that are discarded. So he has a huge menagerie as well as like a toy store. But he's also fixing the toys. What I love, because it is revealed in the third act, this is Santa Claus. What I do love about it is I did not see it coming at all.
No, there's no reason for you to.
Like,
you're supposed to just be like, oh, this guy's just a friendly drunk, you know, who has befriended all these toys. And yeah,
the toys call him Paw.
Yeah, and he might be some sort of like savant genius because he's got these magic candies.
Yes, that's one thing where I was just like, oh, are we just to assume that he knows magic? I guess that's fine. It makes so much more sense than watching it like again.
Well, if I can believe that like a ninja rat has survived and teaches four turtles martial arts and helps save the city, I'm fine with this. I can believe in magical Santa Claus in the sewer.
It's at this point in the movie where you find all these talking toys and pets that you begin to believe in magic yourself, but also disbanding kind of the reality that the main character found himself in, this like kind of bleak, comedic but bleak reality on the surface world. But then instead of giving Pikadon the turtle, who's also just called Turtle a lot of the movie, which is comma.
Yeah. Only Ryo calls him Pikadon.
Instead of giving him the magic, what do they call it?
Candies.
Magic candy that allows him to talk. He gives him the wish candy, which is like,
which everyone's like, wait, you have what now? All the toys are like, whoa, hold the phone.
Everyone's like, why can't we wish ourselves back? Apparently this magic universe, when you wish, you grow larger in some shape. So he immediately grants the wish of Ryoshi to become this pop star, which sets off that plot of the film. And in doing so, grows to, say, about maybe like 5 feet wide, maybe 3 feet tall.
Yeah,
pretty big turtle.
Yeah, that's super big, but like tortoise big.
I mean, much larger than most tortoises. Like at one point, she kind of rides him around his room.
Well, no. He certainly gets. Well, some tortoises get pretty big.
True.
Like he kind of skirts that line for a bit and then becomes real big.
Also becomes absolutely adorable. Becomes like super gamma cute adorable.
They knew what they were doing when they put them googly eyes on him.
But yeah, I loved the other kind of puppeted toys as well. PC 300 is very cute.
Drinks the whiskey.
Sulky is great.
Sulky would be like voiced by like a David Spade like here, you know, like it's just that super sardonic, like, you know, yeah. Here's the one thing I really don't love about this movie is that it does the standard kind of flawed rock hero story where it's like, and I think this is where the problem for me is, like, you see how Ryu is kind of manipulated by the system pretty immediately, but fully buys into it and just becomes the your standard kind of like jerk rock and roller. And we've seen the story a million times. And it's a problem for me because it makes him a little like irredeemable in some spots. Like he doesn't seem to have that third dimension. Like it's not like every single time he sees, oh gosh, what's her name? His nerdy love.
Go.
Yes. That like he changes because he starts to like bypass her. And it's the one part of the movie that kind of bothers me because I don't feel like he earns the redemption at the end. Like he's kind of given it and realizes what he's become in search of what he perceived his dream to be. But I kind of wish we got a little more dimension with his character. Like we had moments like the first time that Picadon appears to him after that first song is good. But after that, like, I mean, he kind of goes off the reservation a bit, and it does make it hard to empathize with him in the third act.
Yeah, I think the realization comes to you at the end of the movie is that the dreams that he was like vision boarding almost exactly right. For his turtle to follow along as kind of like a single path of life is not what he actually wanted, because
right,
Picadon actually voices his one true wish, which is to fall in love with Yuko, and he realizes that he basically gave that up for the actual and fame and fortune and what have you.
I do love how this movie does finish, because you know he leaves the Nippon Stadium, which is great. I love that they were there, despite how superimposed everything was. Like yeah. It's still super cool. And then like walks, like he takes off his rock outfit, or at least his shirt, and walks back to his dingy apartment that he had not been in, perceivably in forever.
Yeah.
And
maybe weeks, maybe months, who knows?
we have no idea. Sits down, and then a little baby turtle pops back up. And and like he's back where he wants to be. Like he, you know, it was a great dream that he's a rock star, but like clearly that was bad for him. And he's back to being pure happy.
Yeah, and Yuko comes to
and we see her. I also love that we don't get the resolution there. Yeah. Like we know that she's there, and we know that, you know,
the end of the movie does leave me wanting more. But I'd already been on such like an emotional journey.
I think it's the perfect way to end it, because I think we as the audience who have seen this movie and know where it's going, know where this conversation is going. I don't think we actually have to see it.
I think my favorite horror movie, and you know, going back to spoilers, is the twist in the third act where
Santa Claus.
Before that, Pa has a Christmas party with all the toys and animals, the discarded orphan animals, and makes them a special drink. And you see him putting one of his magic candies in each of the drinks into like milk dishes for the cats and kittens. And you're like, oh, is he going to give them all the ability to wish like Picadon? Are we about to get like tons of giant kaiju? It like smash cuts to a scene like a minute later where all the animals and toys are just lying on the ground lifeless. And I was like, oh my God, Paul, what have you done? No.
Right.
I was such an emotional wreck. I was like, no way this movie is going this route. And it doesn't, because the next scene, Maria had run away with Picadon. Maria, the kind of like,
oh, American, that's right. Ball. Yes. And yes.
Santa shows up. Like, it's so funny because Paul was dressed as Santa like the scene before, but this is real.
But then,
Santa,
then,
like,
but
real
he had beard. A fake beard on before, but then he's got like a real one on in the lab, which
picks up.
He just shows up in the lab and everyone's cool with it.
Oh, whoa. So only people that believe in Santa can see Santa. He explains that pretty well. But he picks up Maria, the discarded doll, and brings her back to what is now Santa's workshop. It's got a sleigh. The reindeer showed up and makes her whole again, basically like resets her to factory standard. And you see all the pets have been like reduced in age. So there's no old pets. They're all like young kittens and puppies.
I don't know.
Did you not get this, Miles?
I don't think either I looked away or what the version that I watched like somehow skipped over that part.
Miles, I nearly started.
I can recall everything else in this film but that.
go back and watch that part, because I was so relieved and so shocked that this is what Santa.
No, that's why I started off being like, this is super messed up, because he murdered these dogs.
No. He he resets them and he's giving all these toys away.
Okay, again, so whatever I watched, I don't like, I saw that Santa Claus was real, was like he comes to save Pikadon, but like for whatever reason, like it didn't have the workshop scene.
I mean, I just watched the, there's very the few ways archive? to watch, yeah, this film, sadly. Internet Archive.
I don't know if I looked away or something then, because I did not see that scene.
Go ahead and just rewatch that like 5 minute sequence, because like I said, I was nearly in tears. I was like, no way, this is now Santa Claus who's reusing all the toys and giving them homes. And that's why he said they're only there for 1 year before he gets a new like crop or a new class of students, because he gives all them a new home for someone that will love them. And it's like, oh boy, this movie is all about finding kind of love where you can. And
yeah, it's a, I mean, it's essentially like a version of Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. It is a movie for the misfit toys, which I do love. I wish that was more of the prevalent message, but Ryu's story kind of muddies that to me.
Yeah. I mean, he is also obviously searching for love.
For sure. He is. I just needed that to be more prevalent in his story.
Yeah. That's the thing. I think what this movie needs, the only thing keeping it from being perfect in my eyes, is like, I need him to meet Santa. You know, I want Santa.
It's really weird that they don't meet the need.
those A and B plots like never really intersect too much.
And that's I mean, so some of those issues are where my faults with the movie do kind of hurt my overall like feeling of it, and it's certainly my scores. And it's interesting because like they're big deals. It's not like, oh yeah, this was a minor thing and I can overlook this. It's like, no, like these things would have made, for me, this movie is really good. It could have been a great film to me. Like, yeah. if all the things actively connected the way that the filmmakers really intended to, I think that we would have had a Christmas classic on our hands. And I think this does fall a little short of that for me. It certainly gets the vibes, and you can't argue that.
There are so many references. Wikizilla has pointed out, which I love. Pikadon is voiced by Ikuo Itani, who voices she's the Japanese voice actress for Pikachu for many, many years.
That is phenomenal. And recently passed away, correct?
Ikuo Itani? Did Pikachu die?
I thought.
No, she's still alive.
Okay, so someone of that ilk recently passed away.
The voice actress for... Meowth also plays Sulky, the cat. Revolution Q, I just thought from the title was going to be a reference to Ultra Q, but yeah, probably is a reference to the episode that I dislike the most, which is Grow Up Little Turtle, about the pet turtle that the character kind of rides around on, the magical pet turtle. And then of course, yeah, there's a lot of Gamera references kind of in this movie, and it's so funny that no one calls him Gamera at any point, but
at no point
we get a very short sequence of kaiju kind of destruction. But I love that the news anchor's covering it. It's like, oh yeah, there's been no reported death so far because it's a turtle. He's moving very slowly, so you can just get out of the way. But in the same scene that they say that, like, there's like a giant like explosion on the street, like cars are exploding, which is very funny. But he's kaiju sized for a short time in this movie, but it's pretty good special effects. It's like a mix of practical and CGI in parts, but it's not much CGI from what I can tell.
I think it looks really, really solid.
I was impressed. I did not expect a lot going into this movie, but yeah, when we get kind of the rampage scene from Pikadon's point of view, and he sees the city as the game board that Ryoshi created, and there's like the little CGI Game of Life pieces in the car. I laughed so hard.
I did as well.
Really, really enjoyed that. And then yeah, he just shows up and blows up Ryoshi's concert and says like, oh yeah, and he's in love with his coworker. Her name is Yuko. All right, bye now. And disappears into very, very classic kind of kaiju energy forms. You know, it reminds me a lot of Heisei era Mothra, how Mothra would dissipate into yellow energy. But yeah, lots of few things to love kaiju related in this movie. Miles, you want to get to rating this bad boy? Talk about what you thought about Love and Peace.
Yeah. So for personal enjoyment, I think this movie is good, not great. I think it's so close in so many aspects. I wish this movie had the cohesion required. That said, it's a very generally lovely movie. I do think it very much feels every minute of its runtime. I think you probably could have shaved off a little time. I don't think it needs to be 2 hours. There's some moments especially in the first act that feel like we could have gotten here a lot quicker.
Yeah, a montage of his kind of life.
There's way too many scenes in that office. You just need like one, really. I think.
Yeah, you honestly could have started with him buying the turtle and then showing him going back to the office. And it's like, oh, there's like 5 minutes. Yeah, gone right there.
Like, I feel like this is should have been a nice 95 to 100 minutes as opposed to like 2 hours. But yeah, no, I think it's really nice. It's very sweet. It looks pretty good. I have problems with Ryo's story not being super redeemable. And what helped add a star for me personally is an actor, Kiyohiko Shibukawa, that I very much love, who's in one of my all-time favorite movies, Fish Story, and has popped up in a lot of things that I've loved, like the genre no movie Wasabi, which is a deep personal love of mine, as well as like Ichi the Killer. Like, he's been acting forever and pops up in things consistently. I think he even pops up in the phenomenal anthology series Midnight Diner, which is really good if you haven't watched any of it.
He also had a great line that made me laugh, which is when he's schmoozing Ryo and the guitarist. And the guitarist like goes to the bathroom. He's like, "You gotta quit that band," like almost immediately. He's like, "By the end of the year, you better drop that band."
It's like, yeah, no, it's super funny. He's got a very animated face, which is what makes him like so noticeable. And that's even the case in Fish Story, where he doesn't have many lines, but he has very like he has facial expressions that mean a lot. And even when he's interacting with people, he's not talking, but he's saying things. And he's an incredible actor. I love seeing him even in a small role here.
I love everybody in this movie.
Everyone in this movie does like a phenomenal job. Yeah. So as much as I want to give this a super high score, I am still a little temperate and am giving it a 7 out of 10.
Okay. I am... I'm ready to watch this movie like immediately. Maybe because it is
seven's still a good score. Like it's still a good score. I am of the it's very good but not great, and that's 7 to me.
I think that this is like such a movie, and maybe it's because I'm a huge Gamera fan as well that I've been waiting for, because we've had so many independent comedic kaiju movies that just
it's the best looking one we've had so far. I feel
that's the other thing, and it's like it uses the kaiju, you know, almost the least. But there's just so many other things to love about this movie. It's a delight. It is, you know, the reason that we started this podcast is to find these hidden gem kaiju movies I would never have gotten around to seeing if we didn't add things to this nearly 300. Yeah,
I
mean,
honestly, this is the kind of stuff that like I get super excited to watch. It's like because I don't always make the time for all of the Japanese cinema that I want to watch. And I mean, obviously I'm doing this, so I like Japanese cinema, but like, it's a big part of like the things that I really enjoy is watching Japanese independent cinema.
Unfortunately,
well, independent here, but like, so getting to see this stuff is always very exciting to me.
So much of my television watching, especially, is kind of like two screen. I'm usually playing a video game and doing something else, or, you know, rarely do I just give movies undivided attention, and I tried to with this movie as much as I could because it is quite good. It feels very rough around the edges, maybe on purpose, maybe because this is one of five films the director did this year, but it kind of adds to the charm that it's not a perfect movie. But yeah, I don't think this is anywhere, you know, god tier kaiju entertainment for me, but it is very well up there from what we've watched recently.
I will award this, I think, a very high compliment. I think Ishiro Honda would have loved this movie.
Yeah. Oh, yes, definitely. So I'm giving it a 9 out of 10. Not perfect, but like I said, I'm ready to watch this like immediately. I threatened my wife with forcing her to watch this. So maybe
I think your wife would enjoy some of it. I don't think she would enjoy the length of it, but
I
because I know her.
she watched Jellyfish Eyes with me. I was like, what are you watching? I was like, I don't even know.
Pure cinema is what you're watching there.
But I think she'd like
it. But no, the horror story you have of her watching the Batman is so funny.
Oh, yeah. Jeez Louise.
not knowing she was in a 3-hour movie and thought they were wrapping up at like an hour and a half in. And you're like, oh, no, there's 90 more minutes left.
Yeah, no, she looked over at me at the end of the third act, which is typically the end of a movie, and was like, how much more time is left? I looked at my watch on my phone. I was like, 60 minutes. It's like, what?
I can see that scene.
Yeah. I love the Batman. That was so good.
Oh, I did too.
For its technical aspects, I really do think this movie is one of the most unique, interesting kaiju films we've had on this list. It is both absurd and very solidly grounded. We didn't really talk about the music because this is a music movie. Music is great. Music's amazing.
Oh, all of the J-rock in this movie rips.
Yeah, it gets stuck in your head. I do want to listen to the soundtrack.
I don't want to listen to the score.
Yeah, there's parts of the score that are, I think, like I said, purposefully rough around the edges, purposely bad and kind of kitschy.
I think they spent all the money on real songs for the J-Rock stuff. So they had to kind of go for like, okay, we'll just like buy some like cut and paste score here.
Well, sometimes the score uses kind of instrumental versions of the Love and Peace theme song.
Right.
Like, oh, that's so good. But Picadon's like march music is.
It sounds like Zarkor the Invader. It's
well, you talked about like 90s Tokusatsu kids show or something like that. It's not good. But I think it's purposely not good. The animation of Picadon is very good. The puppetry, like I said, is purposefully bad in parts. Like Sulky is like really floaty, which is kind of funny.
Sulky, like honestly, if you just told me they digitally took out like the puppet strings, I'd be like, yeah, that makes sense.
It just looked like he's supposed to look like that. The acting is amazing. Directing, very good. I'm trying to nitpick here, but yeah, like you said, this movie does drag a little bit. Like I said, 13 minutes.
It truly does.
Title card. Oh boy. So yeah, I'm not giving it a perfect score in technical. I'm also giving it a 9 out of 10. But I love this movie for a lot of reasons.
No, it's your Jellyfish Eyes.
Yeah. What about you for technical aspects?
So I'm kind of sitting in the same spot. Like I agree with you. The songs absolutely rip. I think they're fantastic. They are bangers. They're really, really good. The acting is also very, very good. Everyone knows what they're supposed to do. Like there are some things where like I said, I don't always love the overemphasizing of features that is prevalent in a lot of Japanese comedy. You see a lot of anime a lot. Mm-hmm. That said, that's not the actor's fault. He was asked to do that specific thing. That is something that works over there, and he does it very, very well. And honestly, seeing his transformation throughout this movie, like they she's all that him, except that like without the whole like we're supposed to pretend Rachel Lee Cook was never attractive in the first place, which is nonsense. But like they do a good job of making him like look greasy and like a typical neat, and they do a phenomenal job of like showing like his like evolutions. Like, oh no, this guy was here the entire time.
It's hard for me to believe that the rock star at the end of the movie is
the same guy. They do a phenomenal job with that. That's both on his end and the costuming and hair and makeup. Mm-hmm. They just did a fantastic job. They do. Every actor does a great job. Obviously, even though he's in a small role, my boy Kiyohiko is fantastic. The score, the script, like I said, I really wanted some dimension to Ryo. That's what holds this movie back entirely for me. Like I would be up there with you giving this 9s and 10s if that connective tissue and the connective tissue to the B plot had just been there. Like if they had just full on made this like feeling like an actual Christmas special, which is seemingly the influence. Mm-hmm. But like they just never take that full step.
The entire climax does take place on December 25th on Christmas Day is the final concert, which is so much fun.
The concert looks great. I'm with you.
The production, it feels like.
When it gets in the Hammy score, even if it's on purpose, it just takes you out of the movie. You're like, oh, woof. The puppetry is really, really solid and purposeful. I'm giving this an 8 out of 10. This sounds like, oh, well, then why didn't you give the movie Personal Enjoyment 8 out of 10? That stuff means more to me for my personal enjoyment. That's why it takes out more. But at the same time, there's so much this movie does so right and hits its marks so many times that, like, despite the fact there are script flaws that do affect my personal enjoyment, there's so much of this movie that does exceptionally well that, like, my personal tastes don't come into play here. Like, I can say that, yes, on a technical level, this movie does so much right. And really, if the script had been there, like, I'm not going to take three full points off because the script is not quite there yet. If it was as bad as, like, Monsters Dark Continent, sure, we'd be talking two or three. But it's not. This is a very, very delightful movie that's very well technically made.
What about for its importance, kind of as a kaiju film? Where do you
this is the part that always sticks for me, because, like, it's not really a kaiju film, so it's tangential at best.
I mean, kaiju, and it's like Jellyfish Eyes isn't like super duper kaiju, but it feels like slotting into the world.
The thing is, like, it at least has a kaiju battle,
yeah,
and that takes up more time. Like, mm-hmm. Picadon is a kaiju for all of, like, maybe 4 minutes, you know? Yeah. And even though the kaiju aspect of Jellyfish Eyes, that's more of a Pokemon movie than a kaiju movie. Absolutely.
I get it.
But it's also a movie that I would recommend people, like, oh, you haven't seen this. You mm-hmm. should check this out. But I also still feel like there's an asterisk to that for me in terms of how it is as a kaiju film, which is why I have to kind of, like, step back, because, like, I do think with a turtle, there's obviously the Gamera connection. But I think that's as far as it goes.
Like I said, I think Ultra Q is probably a good reference for...
Ultra Q,
like,
would be a good reference. This feels
like a kid's Ultra Q movie, you know?
So I don't give it the highest marks, obviously, but it's certainly of a level I'm like, oh, you haven't seen that? You should probably check it out. So I'm standing at a 7 out of 10. Like, I'm not going to mark it too low because I don't think it should. I think this movie is informed by the kaiju cinema that has come before it. I don't know if it offers that much because, like you said, Gamera the Brave had come out, you know, a decade before, and it kind of does this superlatively. But you add in the rock music and the Christmas aspect, and you've got yourself a stew here. So I think this is a delightful little movie that I would love to give more to and just can't. But I know I can rely on you to probably give this another 9. So,
oh, well, how dare you, Miles? I was actually thinking, like, some of these I could easily go all the way up to a 10 for me, like, even personal enjoyment. But I think there's just, like, one or two things holding it back from there. I think its importance is that it feels like this is a part of the kaiju universe that we haven't gotten explored before. There's been a lot of tangential kaiju movies, but this one just seems to enjoy the tokusatsu kind of fantasy world that it envelops.
Feels like it's not Game of the Brave.
It's definitely not Game of the Brave. It's not super duper Daikaiju, but they mention Picadon is, like, a good name for, like, a kaiju in the movie.
It's a very good name for a kaiju, for sure.
But yeah, to be honest, it does have a lot of kaiju DNA that feels like it wouldn't exist without it, even though we don't get a ton of giant size Picadon. But the same thing happened in Demaking and, in to a lesser extent, Jellyfish Eyes. But it feels like the universe is a kaiju-ish universe, if that makes sense. But yeah, I feel like some of the points that have to be considered for its importance in that aspect. But I also think, you know, this movie should get more of a US release. I think more kaiju fans should have access to this because I think it is something that could be cult classic for the fandom.
Oh, I fully agree with you. And so if you watch this movie along with us, if you found this movie, there is a Western Blu-ray by Third Window Films, which is a British distribution company of Japanese films. And they do a really stellar job of curating Japanese cinema of all genres and types. It's not like a company like Tartan, where it was like only like horror and like extreme sci-fi. They do everything. They put out my favorite Fish Story. And a lot of the stuff you might have to ask them. And I told Patrick this before we start recording. Their stuff is labeled as Region B, but some of their stuff is actually for all regions. Because I bought the Fish Story Blu-ray and messaged them specifically to ask, you know, hey, is this, you know, just Region B? And it says Region B, but it's actually all region. And I don't know if that's across the board. I only have one of their releases so far. I also have a region free player, so it means nothing to me if it isn't. But there are Western releases for this movie. If what we have said sounds interesting to you, it's not a super expensive film to find. It's not like trying to find the Synapse Blu-ray of Suspiria where you have to pay like $60-some for, you know, a half decent copy. It's about $20, $25 if you're nasty.
Yeah.
But I don't know why I said that.
I am nasty. I would totally like
it's worth looking out. It's a very, very, they do very, very good work. They try to give you interviews and special features if they can. And I just wanted to use this as a time to like commend Third Window for existing because they're great.
You mentioned that before we started recording, and yes, I can confirm the DVD has like an hour making of kind of behind the scenes featurette,
which I would love to see
some different. Yeah. That's the other thing. I was trying to find that online and I don't think.
No, some of the proprietary like special features like that, like people aren't ripping them. Unfortunately, but like, I mean, good for Third Window. But no, they do good work, and they do good work getting like good quality scans of the films on there. Again, like my DVD of Fish Story was like from a library like in 2009 because it got a very limited release here, and so actually having a nice copy is awesome. So yeah, I would highly recommend, honestly, getting the movie anyway. Getting a region-free player is not super difficult in the States. And honestly, if you're interested in international cinema, like a lot of the stuff that we talk about, it's your best bet for getting a copy because getting region A stuff is difficult. And then companies like this don't always subscribe to region locking stuff. So you could be in luck.
All right. So great way to watch the film. Like I said, it's one that I think my score of an 8 out of 10 for its importance, it should be higher because I think more people should watch this film. It means my final score is a dirty 9 out of 10 and yours a harder 7 out of 10. Mm-hmm. And our podcast final is an 8 out of 10 for.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty pleased with that. To be honest.
Even talk about it, but just like the title. So
love it. I did dislike the title until you find out like the title is based off the song. So I'm like, okay, I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Once the song comes into play, you're like, okay. Mm-hmm. The title's fine.
They couldn't call it Peekadon, I Choose You.
No.
I love you, Peekadon. Right. So that is it. Our 2 weeks late holiday special for Love and Peace. Yeah. Boy, howdy. Where can folks find us, Miles, if they want to talk about this movie?
So if you want to talk about this movie and not last week's movie, you can find us at, you can tweet to us at Kaiju versus History. You can email us at KaijuVersusHistory@gmail.com. Visit our website, Kaiju versus History. Please rate and review our show, comment, share with your friends. Let us know what you think. Check out our Letterboxd account, Kaiju versus History, to see all our reviews and watch our list of films. And then if you want to talk to us in real time and really know what we think about stuff, you can go to CosmicCrit.com. That's a Starfinder actual play podcast that both Patrick and I are on. We have a Discord, and we have a Kaiju versus History channel on that Discord. So you can talk to us, Patrick and Miles, from Kaiju versus History in real time while we're bored at work. Patrick, what are we doing next week?
Oh, no. Oh, boy. Just looking ahead at our schedule, Miles.
Guess who's back? Back again.
We're finally going to finish off the long-awaited final film in a Finned franchise that's frayed over its last few
final foibles. Film for now.
Oh yeah, knock on wood. We admit another Asylum film to the annals of Kaiju cinema in the form of yet another Megalodon style adventure, the final of the original quadrilogy. That is, tune in next time for History versus Mega Shark versus Colossus.
Bum, 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 bum.